Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Hi everyone, Jesse Green here. Welcome back to SavvyDentist.com and to the Savvy Dentist Podcast, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Now, my guest today is someone very special. My guest is Mel Thompson, who works in our office with me. And her role in our business is to help the team members help the practice owner. She works with the teams to skill them up, to get them on board, to have them buy in to the vision of the practice owner, to help them follow the systems, the processes, to make sure that the practice is operating consistently and at a really high level day in, day out. So in this conversation, we cover systems and processes, how to create them, how to get people to actually use them, which is a huge problem for many practice owners. They've got a wad full of systems that no one follows, and they're not so useful in that respect. So Mel's going to walk through the work that she does to help practices get their systems written, to get them used, and to get great results for the practice, great outcomes for the patients, and great outcomes for the team members as well. It's a really wide-ranging interview, really practical, very, very tactical, very practical, lots of notes, lots of pearls. And as always, I'm super grateful for the work that Mel does because she's an absolute gem. And here she is. See you soon. Mel, thank you so much for coming to join us once again on the Savvy Dentist Podcast, coming to you all the way from our office. How are you, mate?
I'm great, thanks, Jesse. It's great to be here.
Yeah, look, we got such a good response from the first episode you did with us, and we had tons and tons of lovely comments, and lots of people said they found it really practical and really helpful, that we thought it would be a good idea to have a conversation about another really important topic in the practice, which is systems, and in particular, how to get them used, how to get them implemented. Now, before we get into this, obviously, you've got a background in your own business. What role did systems play in your business?
Oh, look, Jesse, systems are just so important. It just really is the foundation on which everything else is built, because what you really want is consistency. You want people to be delivering consistency. So as a business owner, whether you were in the field I was in or whether you're in dentistry, you know what's being delivered by your team and the standard that it's being delivered at. So systems are really important, not only for the people working them, not only for team, but they're important for the owner. So the owner can say, hey, I've got this system, it's working well, and I know what's being delivered when I'm not there. So they can be reassured that everything's rolling along the way they want it to. That's what a system should be delivering.
Yeah, and again, because that's going to give the owner peace of mind. It's going to give them the ability to take some time out of the business and, as you say, know that those services or goods and services perhaps in some businesses are being delivered to a really high standard consistently day in, day out. Now, one of the challenges that comes up all the time is, yeah, I hear the systems mantra, yeah, we get the systems thing, but why is it that systems, you know, even though we know that they're such a good thing for business because we want those reproducible results, we want that consistency, we want that peace of mind, where do things come unstuck?
Well, it's an interesting question. I think that in many ways, probably it comes unstuck with our delivery and probably with our intention. So we want people to buy into our systems, okay? That's when they hum and they really work well. But we have to put some energy and some intention into getting that buy-in. Mm. The buy-in is not going to happen organically. We have to put some thought and some effort behind it. And I think that's where practices fall over. I have a lot of conversations with practice owners, practice managers, and the question is, oh, you know, half of our team follow the system, it goes really well, and the other half don't. Or we have one receptionist who just can't seem to deliver on the system. You know, she still does it her own way. So it is really about intentionally selling the system to the team.
Okay. So, you know, obviously this particular podcast is mainly going to be listened to by practice owners. There will be some team members that do come around and listen to this. So let's think about this from both sides of the fence for a moment, Mel, because, you know, most of the work that you do, most of the work that I do is really dealing from the owner's perspective, but we want to understand where the team are coming from as well. So perhaps we might start at that point. You know, if you're a team member listening to this, what do you think, Mel, that team member needs to understand about why the business owner is asking them to do things a particular way? Even though they might have done things in a different way, in a different place, and that was probably fine, what is it do you think that the team members need to understand? And then equally, what do you think the business owners need to understand?
Look, great question. I'll talk about the business owners first if I can, because I think what they have to be doing, it's a sales pitch, right? We really want to get buy-in, do that. We need to be selling it to the team. And the way to do that is to sell it that it's, you know, it's our way of doing things. This is maybe the bespoke dental way. This is, you know, the dental practice way. And so what we're promoting is this collective. We're all in this together. This is the way we do things here. And that works so well. If you can think about really big organizations who deliver this well, it is big airlines do it really well. But for us as small practices, it's about getting the buy-in. And the way to do that is to promote it as this is our way. What that means is, hey, this is the way we do things here. So if you're part of the team here, if you're involved here, then this is the way you do it.
Yeah.
From a team, that really works well, because what it means is there's no negotiation, okay? This is the way we do it here. So it doesn't matter whether a team member, you know, comes along and says, hey, this is a great system, but the way we did it, you know, at the practice I was last employed is better. Well, it doesn't matter, because when people are there, they've got to buy into our way. They're buying into the way things are done right there in that workplace. So I think that's really important. It also, from the team member's perspective, it gives them a lot of clarity.
Mm.
So I think you need to have a really robust system and then provide team with clarity and then, you know, adopt the collective, the our way of doing things. When you've got that overarching our way philosophy, you'll find that you're able to get everyone to comply with what you want, because your response to any pushback on that is going to be, but this is the way we do it here. And it may be that you suggest, you know, we might review our way of doing once a year at a team, you know, planning day or something like that. But what you want to be saying is, this is what we've decided. This is the way we do it here. Mm. And, you know, we're going not negotiable until maybe later down the track we have a planning day and we review it. But it just gives everyone this collective feeling and it gives a lot of clarity. Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense, Mel. It makes perfect sense indeed, because, again, what I'm hearing you say is, you know, when someone joins a team, maybe that their way of the old practice, you know, was perfectly good. Maybe it's got something good to offer. Maybe there's something, you know, good that they did do. But I think what I'm hearing you say, and certainly what we do in our business, as you know, is that, you know, if you want to come in and change things, then you've got to be there a few months before you're able to make some changes or wait to that planning meeting. We're not going to come in and turn things on their head immediately, because if we do that, it becomes a bit chaotic. You've got moving pieces everywhere. And then, of course, everyone's coming in with their, you know, 53 suggestions on how to do things. And all of a sudden, the structure that you worked so hard to create just goes out the window and you're back to where you started. Mel, one of the things I wanted to ask you about is, we talk about McDonald's as, you know, perhaps the most systemized business in the world, or regarded as one of them. And it's also regarded as, you know, a very successful restaurant chain. And therefore, there's an inference, if not a direct causation, that systems equal success. And clearly, systems are an important component. But, you know, McDonald's is a little different because they're producing a hamburger and they're employing teenagers for their physical labor, their arms and legs. In our business, we want people to bring their heart and their soul, their heart and mind. You know, we've got a framework called the Engage Hearts and Minds Framework. I'm just wondering if you could speak to that for a moment, because I think there's an important thing that we want to do here, and that is to engage people intellectually and emotionally, not just, you know, physically.
Oh, for sure. Look, I'm a real advocate of the Hearts and Minds Framework. I think, you know, engaging hearts and minds is really essential to everything you want to achieve. So I love that framework. I'm often on my soapbox, you know, calling out that framework. I think the thing that resonates so well when I talk to clients about the Hearts, Engaging Hearts and Minds framework, is that it's about pre-framing. So, you know, it's mentioning what's going on here and having a look at, okay, calling out the elephant in the room, you know, and it may be, hey, guys, I'm just seeing that you're not following this system that we've put in place. So then you want to explain what's in it for them. Okay, so you recognize the issue that you're feeling. You have a think about, what's in it for the team? You know, how am I going to get this buy-in? Why should they follow this framework? And often that might be because, you know, this is our way of doing things, or it could be something like, well, we've all put a lot of work into developing these frameworks, so we're collectively engaged in this as a team. And so, you know, we've voted on this, we've massaged it, we've put it together, and it represents us. So, you know, you're back to that collective of it's a team effort and we want to be compliant because we're all in this together. And I think that's one of the main things about engaging hearts and minds as well. And we want to think about, you know, what's the problem? Have a look at like a prescription. What can we do to fix this problem? And then the other part of engaging hearts and minds is really about instruction and action. So, you know, we can pre-frame, you know, what's going on here. We can talk about what's in it for us, you know, what's in it for the team member. And when you can nail that, then you'll get people listening to what you have to say. When you can talk to them and talk to the issues that might be relevant for them, you know, why should they do it? I actually think that's probably one of the most powerful parts of that framework, Jesse.
I think it is too, Mel, because, you know, one of the things that, you know, we see quite routinely is business owners, not just dentists, but business owners going to a conference, learning something new, coming back to the team and saying, hey, guys, this is what we're doing. Go forth and make it happen. And of course, there's no real reason why they should do it. There's no, you know, benefit for them. And of course, that, you know, when it's imposed upon someone, there can be a little bit of resistance. And sometimes, you know, team members that I'm aware of have at least thought, you know, if we can see it out till Friday, by the end of the week, you know, he'll have forgotten about it or she'll have forgotten about it. And we'll just go back to what we're doing before, right? Well, it's just nothing to see here kind of thing. And so I guess that there's a real risk in that if we don't get that buy-in by understanding what's in it from them, there's that risk, right?
Oh, for sure. And look, the buy-in isn't always so obvious. You know, like as a business owner, you think, well, I pay them to come to work and do it. So, you know, that's what's in it for them. But in actual fact, it's a lot more emotional than that. Mm. You need to be digging deeper and finding, you know, what are the things that are really switching people on? What are the motivators? And what will resonate with them? What will they respond to? And that's really what's in it for them. It's not so much, hey, we come along to work and we get paid. It needs to be a little bit deeper than that.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean.
Yeah. I think the days where you can say, you know, I pay the bills, therefore you shall do it, are long gone. And probably, you know, anyone who adopts that particular methodology is going to find they're going to have some staff turnover, that's for sure. But in any event, you know, I'm sure that still is the prevailing attitude in some places of the economy. But not in dentistry, I hope. So, Mel, if you were a team member and you're listening to this podcast and you're thinking, okay, I want to make a contribution to the practice. I want to make sure that we're doing all the right things. Clearly, we're going to ask them to follow some systems and processes. But moving beyond compliance, what can team members really bring to the party on this?
Yeah, look, I actually think there's a lot they can bring. I think, first of all, we need to appreciate that team members are at the coalface. So they're out the front hearing, talking, you know, representing the business, but they're also part of, you know, the wheel. And so they're interacting on many different levels within the practice. As an owner, you may be chairside most of the day and you won't see all of these things that happen. And so I think you've got to understand team members bring a lot to the conversation about systems, because they're at the coalface using the system. So I think what team members can do, they can think about, you know, how does this system work for us? And ultimately we want to deliver the exceptional patient experience and we want to have, you know, enjoyable work to do that's, you know, rewarding. So how does a system, you know, develop and morph so that it meets both of those demands in the practice? As a team member, you can see the gaps. You can see how this system doesn't work. And you can see what are the things that maybe, you know, we could do better. Now, it doesn't mean that you say, hey, I think we should change this and change that. But it's great to be able to put your ideas forward. And maybe there's a forum for that. Maybe there's a team meeting. Maybe there's the annual planning day. But I think team members need to look for opportunities to improve. You should be on a continual cycle of improvement. And that's what's really valuable to owners. It's coming to the table with some ideas, not just problems, but bring along your solutions. You know, it's not about saying, hey, this is not working, this is a problem. It's about how can we resolve that problem? So it's no good coming along with a problem. You've got to bring the solutions and make those recommendations. So as a team member, you know, I would love that because I love, you know, getting involved in the nitty-gritty and being part of creating the systems. So team members can really contribute a whole lot of intelligence and emotional intelligence to a system which will make it work much better for everyone.
I think every practice owner listening to this podcast has gone amen to that because, you know, one of the things that comes up quite routinely is problems, right? And every business is going to have its challenge. Every practice is going to have its challenge. Every practice, I should say, is going to have things that go awry from time to time. And if you've got a team member who's engaged, who's interested, and who actually cares enough to be able to say, hey, you know, Mr. or Mrs. Practice Owner, this is the issue I've seen, and this is my best thinking so far about what we might do to improve the situation or to counteract this situation or whatever it happens to be, then, you know, if you're a team member, I guarantee you your practice owner is going to love you. And because they're going to love the fact that you've come with initiative, they're going to come, you know, we talk about coming with batteries included. And, you know, that's something that, you know, candidly, as a business owner, you can't train. And you just seem to find people who've got this internal drive and be able to do that. Now, of course, we can recommend and do things, but that attitude, that initiative, that drive, that's something that, you know, is a little innate. And if you've got that drive, if you've got that particular burn to be able to improve things, then I promise you that if you can contribute and demonstrate value to the practice, your practice owner is going to want to keep you. And that's making yourself invaluable to the practice. It's making yourself indispensable to the practice owner. And then from there, you know, we're recording this in the corona period. And of course, there's JobKeeper and JobSeeker and all those things going on. I guarantee you, you'll be safe. You'll have a job. You'll be one of the people that the practice owner is going to do their very best to look after because you're doing your very best to look after the practice. And it's a two-way street. Mel, would you agree with that?
Oh, for sure. For sure. Look, I think sometimes, you know, we don't recognise how we can really make ourselves valuable. You need to sit down and think about that. What does my practice owner need from me and how can I make myself valuable? And definitely that's one of the ways is to be able to say, hey, I can see this isn't working, but I've got some ideas on how it could maybe work better. And look, Jesse, I think the thing too that we forget is when the owner comes back from a conference or they come in with this super duper idea and it's going to create a bit more work for us, you know, that's okay. I think one of the things I'd like to say to team members while we're recording this is be willing to try something. So if your owner comes in with an idea, they've put some thought into it. You know, it's not something they've picked up 5 minutes ago while they're being parked in the car. It's something that they've put some thought into. And so give it a try. You know, we all of a sudden say, oh, I've got so much on. I don't have time for this. How are we going to do this? I'm not going to be able to fit it into my day. But I think, you know, when owners come with suggestions and changes, it's part of our obligation to serve them better by being willing to try something that they've got rolling around in their head and they'd like us to implement. I think that's definitely an important point as well. You know, open the door for some feedback and for maybe some readjustment and some change. But I think, first of all, the owner deserves our commitment to something that they'd like to implement.
Yeah, amen to that. And again, Mel, I know you did that in our business so well. Whenever I've come back from somewhere, I'm going, hey, Mel, I've got this thing. And you go, all right, let's give it a crack. And but the thing around that, what I really appreciate that is sometimes it's not the first try that is successful. So we try again or we change something, or we try another time or whatever it is. And so, again, just to pick up your point, Mel, is giving it a go and being willing to have a go. It doesn't always work the first time, but it's being willing to have the second go or the third go or even the fourth go to really get it right. And I think, you know, it's really easy to say, oh, we tried that once and it didn't work. Well, let's see if we can make it work. Let's see what else we can do rather than instantly thinking, oh, we tried that once and, you know, too bad, so sad. It just didn't work out for us.
For sure. You know, you make a really good point there. And I think the issue is too, it's very rare that you can buy something off the shelf and plug it into your practice and play it and it works perfectly, right? Because, you know, you buy things but you have to massage them into your own way of doing. And so, yeah, look, that's a great point. I think it's about, you know, you may get it humming along on the fourth or fifth, you know, review, but certainly You've got to start somewhere. So that's the starting point, is to let's implement what our owner's looking for and then let's massage it from there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that's really important as well. You know, it's not always going to be the first try that gets, you know, the ball into the goal.
Yeah. So, Mel, we've spoken a bit so far about the importance of having systems and processes in the practice, because that's going to create consistency of outcome. It's going to elevate the patient experience and the patient outcomes. It's going to give the practice owner peace of mind and the opportunity to focus on other things. It's going to be that leverage point that we talk about through, you know, systems and team is leverage point. But let's talk just for a moment about documentation of systems, because I know that there'll be some practices at various stages of this. Some will be super well documented. Some will barely have anything documented. Where would you start if you just had a blank piece of paper and you're thinking, oh my God, I've got no systems, nothing? What's a starting point? How would someone pick this up and go, right, let's get into it?
Yeah, well, great question. I actually think that, you know, the blank piece of paper is great because you can carve it out the way you want it. I think, you know, looking at templates is really important. First of all, have your frameworks or your SOP. So have the actual design of how you want to lay out the information. Now, some practices have it all in templates, in frameworks and SOPs, and they do videos. So, you know, there's different ways that you can record your systems. But I think, you know, sometimes it's about asking the person that does the job to write the system. So, for example, if I'm a practice owner, I'm probably going to sit down and it'll take me a few hours for me to map out how someone maybe answers the phone or deals with a cancellation. But if we go to the source, go to the team members that actually deliver that service for you every day, they will be able to put that on paper, you know, within minutes. Mm. And so it really is using the collective intelligence that you already have in your practice and use that to get the systems down on paper, and then you can test them. So, you know, I might write a system for a process that's in Steri. I might, you know, work in the clinic area, and then I would hand that on to my colleagues to test it. So I might write the procedure, but we want it tested to make sure that what's written can actually be implemented or is what's being implemented. And then it's tested and ticked off as being, you know, accurate and useful. So systems are best written by the people that actually deliver them and work in them. Would you agree with that?
100%, Mel. I think that that's the key. I think, yeah, too many practice owners sit there with a list of systems that need to be created, thinking that they have to be the ones to do it. And it not only is that just a massive undertaking, it's also not always appropriate because they're not necessarily the best person to do it. So the best person to do it, as you've indicated, is the person who already does it. And then, yeah, as you say, testing those systems, making sure that the results are reproducible. So in your example, if you've written a Steri system, maybe getting someone who doesn't work in Steri normally to follow the system to the letter, and they should get the same outcome as the person who does that job routinely. And if they do, great. That system is then adopted and, you know, incorporated into our document library. And if it's not getting the right outcome, then we've got to go back and review and see, where did that system break down? What happened? What step did we miss? Did we have enough detail in there? And so on and so forth. So again, there's an iterative process where those systems are improved and refined until someone who's not normally in that role can get the same outcome as someone who does it, you know, as their day-to-day job. And I really like the fact that you've articulated that so clearly. Mel, where else do you think with systems that people can come unstuck? You know, it's either the documentation, getting them implemented. Is there any other place there that you think people might struggle getting this to work?
Look, I think a lot of these things take training. You know, they take time with individuals, training them and making sure they're aware of the system. Mm. I think sometimes we recruit and we train and we induct, or we recruit, induct, train really, really well. And other times where, you know, we're flat out busy and so another team member's recruited, but maybe this time we haven't actually followed our complete induction system, or we haven't actually spent the time that we needed to spend with this new recruit to get them up to speed. So I think it's about knowing that you understand the system. So as a team member, we all need to know the system. We need to know, you know, where we can find the documentation or the videos. We need to know that the systems exist and what the expectation is around the system. So there's a lot of clarity that's needed around systems, and sometimes you can talk to owners and some of their team are great at following a system and others may not be. Mm. But the first thing you need to look at is, did they get the best training on this system? Did they get the best induction on this system? And is that why maybe they're not as good at it as what some of the other team members are? So training is really important, talking about the system. I love bringing up systems at every team meeting. I think every time you have a team meeting, you should have a review of one of your systems. Very quick, 10 minutes, very short, but just review a policy, a procedure, an SOP, a framework, you know, something that you think isn't working quite well, or just work through your list. And so you're constantly bringing these up with the team members and talking about them at team meetings to remind them that these systems exist.
Mm.
That's what I think. You know, our communication about the system is really critical.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And I think the point you raised is a really important one, and that is the training of the team is so critical, and the investment that owners put into that produces dividends way, way, way beyond the time taken to do the training. And yet there's a real reluctance for some practice owners to do it. And you know, many sporting teams, you know, the successful ones will train infinitely more than they compete. And yet in business, we're often competing or on the field much more than we're training. And I think that time taken to train is really key. And, you know, the businesses that we see that are thriving in the work that we do are the ones that regard themselves as a training organization. And, you know, in this world where we've got an abundance of just about every resource, you know, information, all of that is in abundance. What's not in abundance, though, is human resource capital, and having really well-skilled, highly trained team members is something that I think is going to be a force multiplier for businesses. So those businesses that do train and train well will see the fruits of that labor, you know, many, many times over. Mel, I wanted just to ask you a quick question, and perhaps this is a little bit of a leading question, but you know, we've spoken about creation of processes and systems, you know, onboarding, training, induction, all those other sorts of things, making sure that we give people the opportunity to follow our systems for a while before they suggest improvements at an annual planning day or whatever it happens to be. And even with all of those things in place, there's still going to be one or two team members from time to time, potentially, who just kind of go, yeah, I'm not going to buy into that. For whatever reason, even if the practice owner has just done everything right, we've got a bit of a framework again called the necessary conversation. And of course, we talk about that in a series of, you know, several conversations. But do you want to have a bit of a chat about the necessary conversation, why that's an important framework?
Yeah, for sure. It is very important. It's, you know, it's at the top of the toolbox, I think. You know, if you talk about all these systems and processes that we have, there's a few little gems, you know, engaging hearts and minds and the necessary conversation that are right at the top of the toolbox. It's important because it's a process of really putting that critical thinking into your conversation before you have it. And I think that's the real gem in that framework, is it asks you to think about what's going to happen. What can happen at that conversation? What could go wrong? You know, and sometimes we just launch into conversations, Jesse, without any thought at all.
Yes.
And we do them in the corridor in between patients, you know, I must talk to so-and-so today about the fact that I'm not happy about X, Y, Z. And of course, you bring it up, you know, passing in the corridor between patients, which isn't the right time, place, and probably won't have, you know, the right impact. So I love that framework because it asks you to think about where you're having the conversation, how long it's going to take, what are the key things you want to mention, talks about, you know, inviting perspective, inviting the other person's perspective first before you put your own perspective forward. And it talks about, you know, finding a pathway forward that's going to work. So it helps you manage any historical issues that might come up in the conversation. And, of course, on that framework, anyone who knows that framework well, the right-hand side, those three boxes are just absolute magic. You know, they ask you to think about the triggers. You know, what are the triggers that might come up that derail the conversation? Yeah. And that can happen really easily.
Very.
For sure. And the emotions that are present, which are really important. We don't think about that. We think about getting a problem solved and talking about it, but we don't think about what's going to be present in that conversation for both people and how can we deal with that so that the outcome of the conversation is achieved and we don't walk away having just blown up and lost our cool and, you know, told someone to leave or someone, you know, has walked out. So, yeah, it's a fabulous tool for managing the conversation and getting what you need from it.
Well, Mel, I think, yeah, you know this story as well as I know this story, but they say that necessity is the mother of invention. And that framework, ladies and gents, was created after I totally botched a conversation with a former team member. But we had a corridor conversation. It was Friday afternoon, and it did not go well. And it was a conversation that, as I reflect upon it, could have gone a whole lot better had we not had a corridor conversation, had we put some thought into that. So the reason I wrote that framework is because I actually stuffed it up and I wanted a better way. And, yeah, Mel will remember that situation quite well. It wasn't Mel, of course, who I had that conversation with, just to be clear. But out of that conversation came that framework that I wrote. And what I really like that you've highlighted about that framework, Mel, is that right-hand side where those boxes are on the right-hand side where understanding the emotions that are likely to be present for you, for the other person, what are the things that could set you off? And again, you know, knowing that if someone's going to say something to you that might cause you to react rather than to respond and to not take the bait and to be able to just let it wash over you, I think is going to be important. If you need to deal with a team member and it is a conversation where you think it might be a little bit, you know, emotive, then I'm going to suggest that you have a framework for a conversation. And of course, the quality of any conversation comes back to two things, and that is structure and preparation. And the necessary conversation is a structure that we use day in, day out. And of course, the prep sheet is going to be key as well.
I have to tell you something funny about that, Jesse, because I have used that necessary conversation framework on my children.
Yeah.
And I actually taught my son to use the necessary conversation framework.
Oh, nice.
And now he'll say to me, "You're not using the necessary conversation framework on me, are you?"
Yeah.
So it's not just team.
No.
It work at home as well, guarantee it.
Absolutely. Hey, Mel, you've been an absolute trooper and a superstar as always. I firstly want to say how much I appreciate the work that you do for our clients and their team members and helping them support the practice owners. As we've gone through this particular conversation, is there anything else that you think we should leave the audience with just to wrap up with?
Look, I'm probably going to say that, look, we've got some awesome resources in the Savvy Dentist Academy. I don't know if I'm allowed to say that or not, but, you know, get in there and use them. They're fantastic. I've got some awesome stuff for teams in there that I've recorded. And I think for me, I'm going to hark back to that language around this is our way of doing things. Mm. This is the way we do things here. This is our way, because it's a beautiful way of saying, hey, we're all in this together. This system can hum along, but it's only going to hum along if we all do it the same way and we're all collectively engaged with it. So, you know, on leaving this conversation, I'd just like to remind people that our way is a beautiful way of getting people to think about, hey, you know, I'm here. I'm not in the other practice that I've just left. You know, I'm not thinking about what I've learned in my course. I'm committed to doing things our way. I'm part of this process, this practice, you know, this whole lovely collective notion of our. I love that word. So, that's really my advice, is to, you know, maybe tweak your language and then you can get people buying into your systems in a more, I suppose, concrete way. And just one last thing, if we've got time.
Yeah, go for it.
I actually want to encourage team members to pull each other up. So, for example, if we're at reception and there's three of us and one of us doesn't follow the system, if I was the practice owner, I'd really want to, you know, feeling my guts that one of those other receptionists is going to pull, you know, the other team member aside and go, hey, that's not the way we do it here. That's not our way. Let's sit down and work through this together. You know, let's bring the really good stuff that happens at reception and make sure we're training it to those that aren't quite up to scratch as yet. And I'd love to think team members could do that for each other and with each other, so that, you know, the practice owner knows that everyone's looking out for the business. It's all about making the business hum and making the business successful. The practice is successful. We all win. Everyone who walks through that door as a team member wins when the practice wins.
Yeah.
And probably that's my parting message, I think.
Yeah, look, I love that, Mel. And you've just described very neatly what we refer to as a self-managing team, one that can self-regulate, one that can self-correct, and one that can self-manage. And I love that. Ladies and gents, if you are interested in hearing about the Savvy Dentist Academy, come and join us. We'd love to see you there. You can head across to savvydentistacademy.com/trial and come and join us. It's for a two-week trial. We'd love to see you there. Come and check it out. Have a poke around, see what resources are there. There's a ton of stuff there, but we'd love to see you in there as well. And you can see all those resources that Mel spoke about. Mel, just once again, I just want to say thank you so much for taking the time to come and hang on the podcast. As always, it's a treat and a pleasure. And I'll see you back in the office shortly.
Yeah, look, it's my pleasure, Jesse. Thanks so much for having me.
Cheers, thanks.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist podcast with Dr. Jesse Green. For more free tools and resources, join the free Facebook group. Visit drjessegreen.com/Facebook. And for more episodes, visit drjessegreen.com/savvydentist.